It's recording now.
Very warm welcome to everybody. This is Lucia Renee, and today is the 13th of April, 2014. And we are very, very excited here at the Awaken Academy to honor a very special guest and a very dear friend of mine. Let me tell you just a little bit about Pamela Wilson. I know many of you know her, but some of you at the Academy have not had the privilege of sitting with her. And I'd like to give you just a brief recap, and then we'll have her go into it more fully, some aspects of her past and her study and so on. But she's a native of San Francisco, and refers to herself as a passionate scholar of the truth. And my God, I can certainly testify that that is the case. She currently functions as a human equivalent of a guide dog for spiritual seekers. And she speaks the truth of Advaita, non-duality. In other words, that the universe is one undivided whole. And we'll have her talk more about that. But for the past 15 years, she's traveled in the U.S., Canada, Europe, widely. She holds satsangs, meaning a gathering for those of you who don't know where we speak the truth of existence. And she gives private sessions. She does week-long retreats, Mexico, Costa Rica, France, the U.K., Canada, the U.S., and has endeared herself to many, many people through her lighthearted humor and her compassion and her deep understanding of what it is to be human. I encountered Pamela personally back in 2002 when I lived in New Mexico, and I began sitting with her in satsang at every opportunity. I was living in Los Alamos, and she was in Santa Fe, but she would travel to Taos, and I never missed a satsang, and I would be right there in the front row because she had something that I was missing in my spiritual development of many, many years, and that was I knew I was carrying a lot of emotional baggage and had to do a great deal of work on myself to clear it, and I was determined to do that by the time I met her. And so I would sit in the front row, and I wanted to just absorb the light because I could see that Pamela was the real deal, that she really walked her talk spiritually. And I wanted to map and understand at a deep level her compassion and her willingness to welcome in any emotion, any emotional baggage, no matter how awful, how embarrassing. And I worked with her for many years, and she really helped me to clear some of the very final, subtle polarities that I was working with in my attention field. I also had a boyfriend at the time that we'll call Anders, some of you may know. and he had been working with a few people in Santa Fe, and I could tell they were not the real deal. So I said to him one night, I said, come with me, I'll introduce you to the real deal. And Anders sat with Pamela for many years, and his nickname for Pamela was the Blonde Buddha. So we're very, very happy at Awaken Academy to welcome the Blonde Buddha, and I'm so happy, Pamela, to have you with us today. Welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here with everyone.
Yeah. Let me, for those of you who are new to the Academy, it is an Academy for women, but occasionally we open the doors and invite men into the garden to have tea with us and sit and have a special experience, an interview, an upgrade in consciousness, whatever. So if you don't know the Academy, I would invite you to check out our website. And it's an Academy for women who want a well-rounded spiritual education. We teach many disciplines, mysticism, meditation, psychic development. We have healings. We do all kinds of things at the Academy. But it's for women who are very serious about their spiritual growth and want to round out their education and actualize what we call nirvana in their everyday life. So, and Pamela has certainly done that and will speak to us, I'm sure, in depth about that today. So Pamela, let's see, where do we begin? I thought I might ask you, it's always interesting to kind of look at what's happening in the world, and I know you travel widely, and your satsang is very far-reaching. And so I think some of us would be interested to hear, because you have your finger on the pulse of people worldwide. What are your perceptions, or what perceptions are coming to you in terms of consciousness and people and growth in consciousness at this time?
Well, it's the news is heartening, which is always good to hear. What I'm noticing is the veils are very thin now, so pretty much everybody can notice and live their true nature. It appears the emphasis in satsang is no longer on who am I, but the emphasis is on how to liberate my mind and my emotions and maybe even my body. So that's an inquiry that I'm very passionate about now.
So that's excellent progress.
Yeah, it is. Everybody's, you know, over the hump, so to speak, of who
yeah.
am I. Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like we're on the downward slope. I mean, for those who are really serious about clearing, then it becomes easier and easier to do that.
Yes.
And so for those of us who don't know you, many do, but I, you know, Victoria Moore, who is also one of the mystics and mentors at the Academy, and I mounted a retreat for Rama's women students. Rama was my spiritual teacher before I met Pamela. And there were 24 women there, and we invited Pamela, it was in Santa Fe, we invited her to come and talk. And I remember how inspiring it was to women there, and I'm sure to people in general, to hear a little bit about your story of awakening with your teachers and with Neelam and how that happened, because we tend to put people on pedestals. I know with Rama, I tended to put him on a pedestal and say, well, when I awaken, if I am fortunate enough to awaken in this lifetime fully, that's the way I will be. I'll be just like Rama because that's enlightenment. And then after Rama passed and I began working with a number of women students who were women mentors who were enlightened, I began to realize, no, it outplays differently for each of us. It's very unique depending upon the person, the embodiment, and the personality to some extent remains. And so I think it helps people to come into a deeper understanding that their own path and their own awakening is unique. To hear about someone's journey, are you willing to share a little bit about that?
Yes, yes, yes. It's to share about it is to celebrate the grace of all of it. I was, like a lot of friends, restless and dissatisfied and bearing sorrow from the past and sort of arcing between inferiority and then occasionally feeling higher or superior because I was a spiritual practitioner. But, you know, honestly, I never felt the constancy of rooted being here. So I would go to satsang a lot, and I was lucky to meet a teacher, Lester Levinson. I had first done TM, and then I finally got to sit with Lester Levinson. But he sort of assigned folks that weren't resting to guide us along, and then occasionally he'd come visit. But I remember whenever he'd enter the room, this energy would start to rise in my body, and I actually had to keep my hands on either side of my ribs to contain it because there was fear about whatever it was. And then he passed and I sat with Robert Adams, which was also just magnificent. While I was in his company, I experienced that effortless peace that was stabilized and there was no story of me being deficient. I just was here. And so that was like a refuge just to go sit with him.
Was he a disciple of Ramana Maharishi?
Yes, he had been with Ramana the last 3 years of Ramana's life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then his body passed, apparently. he's still alive and well. They all are. And I was very, very, very sad. And a friend of mine, Andre, who I'd met at a Francis Lucille satsang, said, "Have you sat with Neelam?" Because we were all sitting with Gangaji at that time. Mm-hmm. And I said, no. So he took me over to her small Berkeley apartment. And once again, that same stabilized, rooted mountain peace. And, you know, it just, everything in my body said yes to it, just the way it did with Robert and Gangaji and Lester. Even when I was in the wilderness, same effect would happen. So then one day he asked me to take her to a satsang the next day, and it was going to be an outdoor satsang near Stinson Beach, California. And when I arrived, I had handed her a necklace that was wrapped, and she put it in her pocket, and off we went to the satsang, and I parked the car, and she walked up this little hill, and then I followed. And as I arrived at the satsang site, which was at the top of a hill, she was sitting between two boulders, these magnificent boulders. And when I looked at the boulders, I felt, oh, that's Ramana and Papaji, because at Gangaji's satsang, she'd have these two huge photos of those two amazing saints and sages. Mm-hmm. And then I sat down. And there was only one other young man in Neelam Sangha who was resting, and the rest of us always liked to sit next to him because you would get secondhand smoke off of him. You'd get a double transmission from Neelam and also from Prem. And it was very hot that day, and I didn't bring a hat. And he was the only one also who didn't have a hat on. And at one point, midway through the satsang, he stood up and came over near me and sat in the shade of another boulder. And he was faced towards me. And a few minutes before that, this river of love had started to emanate from my chest towards Neelam. And it had only done that before with Robert Adams. It was definitely this outflow of a very palpable river of love. And when he sat down and faced me with his eyes closed, all of a sudden the river of love split. Half of it went to Neelam and half went to Prem. And then there was actually this, I'd have to say, like a blast of light. And my eyes were closed the whole time, but in the image of within, I saw my hands rise up, my arms rise up in celebration or in ecstasy. And then that experience faded away, and there was just this quietness. And it felt, in the moment, it felt like a moving van of peace had dropped off, delivered this immense peace. And I was just savoring it. And the satsang ended. And I went to get Neelam food, delivered the food, and then sat down again. And I noticed that this immense peace was totally stabilized and rooted. And so after a while, I walked up to her, because on the way, she had told me a story about her Chinese master in Poland or Germany, and she had asked him, "What is enlightenment?" And she said he told her, "Enlightenment is walking up to a mountain, sitting, placing your burden down, resting, then standing up, picking up your burden, and walking back down the mountain.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
And as I walked up to her, I looked at her, and she could feel something had shifted in me. And I said, "It appears the bundle was set down." And she looked even deeper into me, and she said, "Ah, it is your love that has brought you here." And that was true. It was this river of love that returned everything back to its naturalness. So that's the story of the moment where the innocence that thought it was Pamela and human and deficient came to rest, and naturalness was revealed.
Mm. Mm. Gorgeous. I remember in Santa Fe you told us then you went home and looked in your closet. Do you remember?
Yeah. It was so funny because that which had left was definitely Pamela and definitely a human character and role. And she was precious, but she wasn't real. And that which drove home back to the little house was reality itself. And it went to bed. And the next morning, it woke up and went into the closet. And it didn't recognize any of the clothing. And it said, "Oh, I will give them to my stepdaughter." Oh, no, it said, "She left me beautiful things." Like somebody had died, you inherited their stuff.
Oh, look at all the beautiful things. Oh, that's a gorgeous story.
But each one of us as unique sages would have a very unique way home. All beautiful, yeah?
Yeah. But I love the way you describe the silence, the quietude. You know, it's nothing special.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing special. The bundle gets put down. I guess that's, you know, that's the Zen expression of before enlightenment, chop wood and carry water, and after enlightenment, chop wood and carry water.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Everything's the same. It's just that there's stabilization, rootedness.
Yeah.
Even those things still come and go, and sometimes the unshakable appears to be shakable.
And things continue to be processed. I mean, I know I went to sit with you some years after I began sitting with you and to see Neelam, because Neelam came to Santa Fe. And I remember being so struck by the fact that you asked a question. You said, "This has been coming up in consciousness," and she helped you to see it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So continues to be a work of art.
Yes. Yeah. Beautifully said.
So tell us. I know the people who sit with you are very familiar with, you know, what we call Advaita or non-duality, but can you speak just a little bit about that and summarize it for us?
Well, when we're all in that wonderful, relaxed naturalness, it's so evident to notice presence in trees and in your dog or cat or in the wind moving through the flowers and bird song, and often with our friends. And so that is what is. Everything is this natural presence, life itself. So the Advaita celebrates the absolute oneness of everything. And it, I find it deeply honors everything as consciousness. Ramana Maharshi, I think, summed it up beautifully. He said, "The world is not real. Only Brahman is real," meaning only absolute reality is real. But then he said, this is the mischief of life. He said, the world is Brahman. So nothing is what it appears to be. No one is who they appear to be. Everything is this.
Yes, and it's really our perception, our baggage that keeps us from seeing that, experiencing that.
Yeah, and it's actually very simple. I think of each one of us as a pond or a lake when we're embodied. Of course, we're vastness itself. But as soon as the pond is ruffled, yeah, and it isn't going to reflect the sky. Unshakable sky quality. So then the practical sage attends to the waves.
I love that, the practical sage. You know, one of the things that I most admired about your work and that I was most anxious to learn from you was this state of curiosity that you brought to everything. My training before I met you was as a mystic, and mystics are very concerned with the mechanics of the way energy works. And then when I sat with you, I was in the presence of someone who had a deep understanding of the mechanics of the way perception or consciousness works. And it was fascinating to me and a rather easy skill transfer to enter into that mindset. But there was this childlike wonder that fascinated me. And the realization on my part that if I could embody that, if I could learn that skill or enhance that skill and learn to turn that childlike wonder or curiosity onto whatever situation was presenting itself in consciousness, I would be, you know, light years ahead. And it was really one of the things that I tried to absorb. And I did. I learned when I went on to help people process, that was a quality that people would say, well, this comes through. And I know where I got that. I have you to thank for that.
Oh, lovely. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's our naturalness, isn't it? Deep down, that childlike awe and wonder for all that is.
And so for you, was that completely natural, or did you have to remember that to go back and reinvent that or reclaim that? Or how did you, I mean, it's this magnificent curiosity that you apply to everything. Can you talk about that?
Well, I think we all have it when we're young, and then as the intellect, which I deeply bow to, strengthens, it sort of mutes the colors of life a little bit. Yeah. So I actually got it from, or the return to that naturalness, from something that Papaji or Punjaji invited. He said to look within, approach everything with devotion and gratitude, and then stay as heart. I would say rest as heart. But I remember I was trained, my spiritual practice with Lester was quite a bit of a severe thing where we were seeking out anything that was non-love or non-peace and actually eliminating it. Yeah. Now, it never worked because basically you were going against phenomena. Mm. And phenomena is animated by absolute reality. So it's actually an impossible task to tame phenomena, meaning emotions, thoughts, sensations, the body, and also other people. Impossible task. But I noticed the first time I read that, I went in and I bowed, my way of showing devotion, to a few things inside that were disturbing the field, so to speak. And I can't believe it, in that moment, they burst open and returned back to stillness.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, oh my God, have I been doing it the hard way? Mm-hmm. No. So that delight is stayed with me, and that's what I love, you know, inviting folks to notice inside when they function as kindness and clarity or the respect, which is true nature. Everything returns to its naturalness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you do that so beautifully. I mean, you go to satsang with Pamela, and it's like there's nothing. There's nothing that is unacceptable. Nothing. You can bring anything to satsang. And there's this beautiful, nurturing, accepting quality, which in itself just provides relief for the embodiment. The embodiment relaxes, you know, and it says, oh, okay, it is possible to look at this. You know?
I see this great quest, you know, that all of us are passionate about. It's the ultimate treasure hunt. Because we're looking for all the divine qualities that we've been told are within ourselves. But when we go within, the compassion isn't firmly established. It'll, you know, arise for our friends and family and nature and as worried love. And the wisdom, sometimes we go in and there's just innocent not knowing and going, where's this great wisdom that they say is within us? So it's so fun to wander around within and go, aha, there you are.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a happy pirate. Treasure.
Yeah, there's this other, I don't know if you still talk a lot about this, but when I sat with you and I remember going to a retreat with you in France, and I was really captivated with this way you had of approaching. I noticed you went through phases, and you know, as a mystic, I was always evaluating and analyzing what technically what you were doing. I know sometimes I bugged you asking technical questions. But you have this amazing ability to perceive the polarity in a unique way. I mean, a lot of people talk about polar opposites and what is conscious and unconscious, but I'll just give an example. It's probably easier to describe that way. There was a woman in France who was enraged. I mean, you know, before she ever spoke in satsang, which took her 3 or 4 days to speak up, just sitting at dinner with her, you could tell there was just so much rage. She was so much she was so unhappy. And she finally spoke about it, and the process was quite long that you took her through, maybe 45 minutes, and you stayed right with her the whole time because it was this huge defense that was really difficult for her to let down. But in the end, you took her through experientially, showing her that the rage was really her power contained. And so this concept of consciousness under pressure, or consciousness contained, is something that I've carried away and I talk about sometimes when I mentor. And it always fascinated me to know that you, I mean, to watch you in satsang, to turn these things around and to be able to name them. And I think I once heard you say that that just began coming up in consciousness and you began to become curious about it and investigate, no?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Yeah, you know, one day I heard Robert Adams' voice say, he had always said in satsang, you are not who you appear to be. You are divine. You are Brahman. You are absolute reality. So that's when I was sitting with him. But one day after he had passed away, many years after that, I heard him say several times inside, nothing is what it appears to be. Nothing is what it appears to be. So that combined with the invitation from Papaji to look within with devotion and gratitude made me a lot more confident about being with something, because I started to notice that form and function is not what it appears to be. And then, of course, it's you know, interpretation and labeling, yeah, will even convince us more, oh, that's anger and that's bad and that sort of thing. But I started to notice even after the shift, the body was, not at the beginning, but later, feeling a deep fatigue. And yet I would notice this fiery, like vitamin B12 would happen when anger would arise. So one day I got really curious about it and just started bowing to it and thanking it. And I was curious, so I started to interview everything. What is your function? I used to say anger said protection, and I honored it for that. And then one day I asked it, what's your essence? And it said, strength. And I asked it, let me feel your strength. And all of a sudden, it was like the embodiment turned into a mountain. Yeah. And there was a kinesthetic sense in the body of mountain strength.
Mm-hmm.
And it stabilized. Whereas before, I had been very formless and very heart expansive, but I still didn't feel rooted in the body. So that's why I always think the treasures are actually hidden in our aversions. I had an aversion to anger. And here it gave me my heart's longing to live the way mountains live, or redwoods live, or elephants, or lions.
Yeah. So everything is an invitation into that treasure hunt. Yes.
Yeah.
And what about, I've been busy. I haven't been able to come and sit with you lately, but I have many friends who do on a regular basis, and they tell me that now your language has changed a little bit, and you speak... you're working with the elementals, or you reference the elementals. What is that about?
Well, that was another thing that when I was asking the body, because the body can also awaken. There's all these funny ideas that we have that the mind cannot awaken and the body can't. But that's not my experience. Everything can, because everything is already this. So one day I was working with the body, because at the time it was feeling like an aging object, and it felt like this little human object that wasn't content. And occasionally it goes back and feels like that. But I asked the body, who are you really? And that's what it revealed itself as, the five elements. And then I asked it, how vast are you? And then the body revealed as the five elements, it's deathless, just the way we are, as space, spaceless space. And I went, oh my goodness. So even the body realized that it cannot die as the five elements. It used to say it dies as the form. But the five elements just return back to themselves, their eternal presence. And then I started to become aware of that in nature. And that this is why curiosity, if we cultivate it or allow it, it's like allowing awareness follow where it's drawn. And for each one of us, that'll be very unique. But it drew me into another realm of existence, so to speak, that's right here, which makes up this realm. So in my innocence, I had believed the human tribal beliefs about the human and the divine as separate realms, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the shift, it felt that a lot of the humanness was liberated. And for the maybe the first 10 years or even, 13 years, I was living as something from an angelic realm. I was definitely divine. I wasn't human. And then I started returning back to human. And but then the rug got pulled out from that, under that. And I realized, I'm not divine or human. And it's funny because that's another set of polarities that I still was convinced was real, you see. So as you notice, Lucia, and most of the friends on the call, that whatever is behind the polarities is where the stabilization is, is where the true nature is. And then I realized, the element, each one of us is already an elemental being. Meaning we're neither human nor divine, which means in the elemental realm, which is nature itself, which is all the galaxies, which is that which animates all forms and functions, there's no, it's all heart. And it has an ancient, ageless wisdom that's practical and mischievous. So I started to realize, that's who we all are. You know, and if you watch little children, they're pure elemental beings. There's no I can't, there's no containment. It's just self-directed, and it's big joy, and it's the vitality is immeasurable. The delight is immeasurable. So that's what I call the return to naturalness. We're life itself, and life always follows where its awareness is drawn.
Yeah, that's a tough polarity. It's and it for me it keeps coming up at more and more subtle levels. So recently I did a teleconference on activation of wonder, and it was a template that I had carried in, you know, into the planet Earth that needed to be disseminated at that particular time. But for me, the personal experience was I had to give it up. I had to give it away.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a little bit of concern afterwards by my embodiment thinking, now I don't experience wonder, you know, and there was a little bit of grief about that. But then I saw, no, you're being asked to stabilize it, to ground it through the physical, through the embodiment, through, in a very human, physical way, right? So the process is beginning of bringing it through more completely, but the quote unquote divine aspect of us, as we've been taught in our spiritual practice, freaks out a little bit when that happens, that transition back into and through more humanness. No.
Yeah, it's very curious because we have to, we're lifted from the human into the divine, right? And it also parallels how presence moves in our bodies and really takes the whole body back, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Because often, you know, with a heart awakening, it'll just lift us back into just natural joy and uncontained, spontaneous freedom from moment to moment. But then what happens is, and I don't know if this resonates for most folks, is usually there's a crash, so to speak. And it can be that something happens in the life, or so you fall back to earth, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going, darn, what happened? I'm back, and I'm not so happy. And I see it as now presence is saying, be with the emotions now, come back into the earth of the body, and also bring presence down.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this generation of mystics and sages, and this is our thing, is we're bringing it down into the belly, which to me the belly is the elemental realm. The heart mm-hmm. is the divine realm, right? Mm-hmm. And the head can sometimes be writing all the human scripts. And for each one of us, they might be centered in different places, but, you know, the elementals say, come down into the earth, come, walk into the fire, right? Mm-hmm. Refresh yourself in water, you know, soar in air. We're all good at soaring in the air, being vastness.
Yeah. But it's really very much in accord with the resurgence of the divine feminine in this new paradigm.
Yeah,
right?
He's very earthy and mama.
So shall we maybe open up for a few questions? Would that be all right?
I would love that.
Yeah. Why don't we give preference, Alejandra? Alejandra's helping us on the control panel today. First of all, to Academy members, seeing as how their membership dues are helping us mount the teleconference, if an Academy member wants to press star 2. And, you know, it's not so much the time for personal questions for Pamela. That would be better in satsang or in a private session. But just if you need clarification about a point or something has occurred to you to get a deeper understanding of us, we've been talking, that would be most welcome. Or you can type something in on the Q&A board and Alejandra will check that.
Definitely. So again, if you have a question, you can raise your hand by pressing star 2. So we have a couple of hands raised. Helen and Rola, your microphone is unmuted.
Hi, Pamela. Hi, Lucia. I was wondering if you could elaborate a little more on the elementals. And are these like, do you think of them as personified? Are they like consciousness of fire and water? Or could you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, when they take form, that would be their first form. But they're just like you and I, they're just pure presence. They're who we all are, right?
Mm-hmm.
So even the gods are playing a role.
When you were talking about it, it's like I felt this kind of stirring in my body, which is very unusual for me because I don't usually feel things in my body very much. And it's like the elementals were almost, you know, saying, hey, we're here or something.
That's right. Yeah, now their food is devotion or respect. So just say hello or welcome or however you're moved. And then they bloom, and then you can ask them if they'll teach you.
Oh.
Yeah, it's very cool. I asked them to take me on as their student and teach me the old ways. Each one of us is what they call in the Tibetan tradition a tirton. Those are the ones that through their passionate inquiry inside bring forth the lost knowledge and gift it to our community.
Ooh.
So they never forgot the lost knowledge.
Wow. That's more clarity than I even asked for. That's beautiful. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Did they like it when you said hello or I love you or welcome?
I think so. Yeah. It's like, I don't know, I've never had that experience before.
Lovely.
Beautiful.
Oh, thank you for being so receptive.
Yeah, I will talk to them further.
That's right. They're your new best friends.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, dear.
So the next question is from Susan White, who writes on the Q&A. Can you elaborate on being present down into the belly, walk into the fire, refresh yourself in water? Thank you. Namaste.
Namaste. Well, just noticing each one of us as unique sages will be called to be with a certain note of humanness. And that's an RSVP to each one of us because it wants to give you a gift. Now, often it's something that we don't want to sit with, and that's why it's a very brilliant treasure hunt, because only a sage that had built up their sage muscles through being with stuff they didn't want to be with would stay with something long enough, if it was uncomfortable, to receive the treasure. Yeah. So for some of us, it might be fatigue, just staying unmoving with fatigue, or it could be, who knows, aversion to people, or even war itself, if you're devastated by reading the news or something. So you'll know which one it is that's inviting you to sit, because it'll be the one that pesters you the most. And what I'm saying, and they all turn out to be amazing qualities that your embodiment hasn't unveiled yet or returned back to. So it's just a poetic way of enter into and stay unmoving with that which you don't want to sit with.
And so by bringing it into the belly, Pamela, are you saying just to be very visceral, very present with it in the body?
Yes, and also I think the belly is our warrior nature. So we want to wake that up. It's often tight because it's in protective warrior. So we want to honor its strength and invite it to become rooted like a mountain, because then everything can rest. So the belly is one of the great treasure centers, which is why in lots of myths, we go into the underworld for treasure.
Beautiful. We have another caller in Beverly Hills, California. Your microphone is now unmuted.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. One of the things that I'm struggling with and working with is you had brought up rage, and I'm sure other women are going through this too, with rage and anger against men for all the things that are going on in the world right now.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Now that's your fire of truth, yeah? So we want to invite it to uncontain itself. Now, not through expression, because that will keep it contained and then it'll go back down into the earth of the body. But just in this moment, just bow to the righteous, clear seeing in it. Does that resonate?
Yes.
Like there's this enormous enough. Yeah? So just keep bowing to it.
Yes, that's exactly it.
Yeah. Just keep bowing to it and tell it, you're right, you're right, you're right. You're right. You're right. And ask it, how big are you? Because we need its medicine. It's going to give amazing medicine to the field once it's liberated. But if it stays in your body, it'll just, it's like having an angry dragon inside. Ask it, how vast are you? Show me your majesty, your dignity, your natural strength. And what is what we were calling rage up to in this moment?
Well, I think that I can find some peace with it, but then I'm also in a position where I'm really called to help, and I'm just not sure what to do.
Right. All you have to do is say yes to the call. It's an RSVP. And just to that in this moment, just yes, yes, yes. Yes, yes, yes. It's like grace calling itself. And it will always use you wisely. But it's gracious, so it's asking you. How about it? So the heart says yes, doesn't it?
It feels better.
Yeah. So anytime that arises, just say yes. And then grace will just arrange it, yeah?
Okay, it makes sense.
But the most important thing is to give, see, that's Kuan Yin's dragon in you, the rage, and you want to liberate it. Because then this compassion that you are, that is the heart of hearts, can ride the dragon. Because otherwise compassion will feel shakable and upset and overwhelmed and what to do.
Hmm? Right. That feels better.
Yeah. So keep bowing to it and find a way. It's also your sword. So you'll just find your own way of honoring it and feeding it. You want to feed it because then it'll uncontain itself totally. And if all beings that are heart beings could uncontain this, the transmission would be epic, and we wouldn't have to do anything because the transmission would balance aggression, greed, the I thought, you know, harshness, brutality. The transmission would go out formlessly and balance everything. That's why, especially in women, rage and anger has been a taboo. Because if it got liberated back into the fire of truth, everything would come to rest. That's why Neelam's fellowship is called Fire of Truth.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for bringing that here and for honoring it. We need your medicine.
So we have another raised hand. Oslin, your microphone is unmuted.
Hi, Pamela.
Hello.
Hello. I don't really have a question. I just wanted to sit with you a little.
My pleasure.
Oh, thank you.
And just take a moment to bow to your own unique embodiment, and I will join you.
Okay.
That's the other taboo for women, is not to honor their own embodiment. And it's because that way our medicine is bottled. Our transmission is still contained. So here, when you bow to yourself for no reason, for any reason, all of a sudden uncontainment happens. And your unique transmission, your unique medicine is gifted to the field. How does that feel?
I feel good.
And then just say thank you inside for no reason. It's like such an ancient song. It's the song of life, really. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Not to me, but to life, yeah. Life saying thank you to itself. Thank you, dear.
Thank you, Pamela.
Much, much love.
Mm-hmm. Same.
Mm.
And we have a couple of Q&A questions. First, Sabina in Madrid asks, says, hi, Pamela. Could you clarify how to find treasures in resistance? Thank you.
Oh, I'm so glad you spoke of that, Sabina. Yeah, now resistance is, it just digs in the body. It's tight, yeah? Now, it's not what it appears to be. So needless to say, we notice we can interview the function of resistance, and it would probably say it serves as protection and maybe postponement. Yeah. And so that's also protection. So if we thank it a few times, because it's all these functions are neutral. They're impersonal functions. So they don't point to any deficiency in any one of us. They're like apps on your phone, yeah? So here we are, and we're just bowing to resistance. And we can ask it, who are you behind your role of resistance? And just respectful, because we don't really know. But maybe it's not just what it appears to be or feels like. And then we might notice that it's all-powerful. Nobody's ever tamed it. So each one of us will have, it's like having a lion or a tiger or a dragon or an enormous elephant that just won't do what you want. So we honor the absolute strength and resistance, and we ask it, let me feel your natural strength. Because natural means unconditioned. At least to me it does. So resistance is when it's perceiving a threat or overwhelmed or tired or whatever. Strength will contract into resistance or contraction. So when you honor it as mountain strength and just tell it, natural strength is welcome here. Thank you for protecting me forever. Because all of these movements are actually proof that we are the great jewel of consciousness, that we are a treasure. If there were no defending, That would mean there was no caring. And yet everything swirls around us to help us discern or to keep us safe or to fulfill our desires. So we just thank you. We rise up as the heart of hearts or as the inner sage. Thank you, thank you. And then they all rest back into their divine qualities, their elemental qualities of strength, vastness, sparkling intelligence, love, and no nonsense, authentic no and authentic yes. So thank you for being with us, Sabina.
Well, there are no other callers with the raised hands. We have a couple of other questions from other members of the public.
Great.
Should I go ahead?
Mm-hmm.
There's a very interesting question from Mark, who says, "Hi, Pamela. Can you speak to awakening and resting in the collective body a bit? It seems so often the emphasis is on the individual body, and there's not so much attention on the greater body, almost as if the cells feel like they have to fully get their act together as an individual before the organism can come together."
Beautiful. I think I know who that Mark is. Wonderful question. Yes, yes, yes. See, I find that the more we uncontain our medicine within, which is our unique transmission, then it wakes up the collective human body, so to speak. So not everybody has to do the work. Not everybody has to seek in order to find the treasure. There's only a certain amount of the human tribe that needs to do it, so to speak. Not that it's need, it's passion. And then the entire tribe gets to download. So I totally bow to you, Mark, for bringing our awareness to also one body of humanity, one body of consciousness displaying uniquely in all the different forms. Yeah, so it's just what he's inviting us to widen our view and give a big blast of loving transmission to all that is. Very nice.
And then we have quite a few other bigger comments that are not so much questions. So maybe we'll send those to you in an email.
Sure. Thank you, Alejandra.
And there's just a question that I'm also wondering. I think this refers to the elementals. Tertons. Somebody's asking how you spell that.
I think it's T-E-R-T-O-N. And it's from the Tibetan language, and they really revere those ones. Those are the ones that, through their deep meditation or inquiry within, those are the sages that bring back the lost teachings. And I think that's happening once again in the collective, in the humanity now. Plus, we get to bask in all the indigenous cultures, wisdom. It's a very rare time now where we get to bask in the wisdom teachings of all the traditions, whereas in the old days, so to speak, you couldn't. So we're being blessed by the Sufis, by the divine feminine, by the Dzogchen practitioners, Buddhists, Zen, shamans, Christian mystics. Just amazing, amazing buffet that we get to nourish ourselves with. but each one of us is a Tirthan. Otherwise, you wouldn't be so passionately sniffing out truth.
Mm-hmm. It seems that we have one raised hand.
Mm-hmm.
Christina, your microphone is unmuted.
Thank you. Hi, Pamela.
Hello.
I would love to hear you speak about fear.
Mm-hmm. But it's one of my other friends. Yeah. So now fear wouldn't arise and present itself to you regularly unless you had good medicine for it. Does that resonate?
Yes, it does.
Ah, very nice. Now, we don't have to know much because we're all beginner sages. So ask fear what it needs in order to rest or feel safe. And anything it says is okay.
Okay, I think I will have to sit with that.
Oh, okay. Well, you can... Can you notice it's also wanting to protect you?
Yes, absolutely. Yes,
that's it. So we thank it for that. Now, Papaji used to talk about 35 million years, everything's been in form, even though it's formless. Does it resonate that fear is rather exhausted?
Yes.
That's it. Now, that's why it's coming to have satsang with you. It's coming for your kindness and clarity. Because it wants to return back to its true nature. Yeah. So it's been protecting you for 35 million years. And now it's limping into your meditation hall, which is your heart. And it's collapsed. Can you give it a blessing?
Yes, I can.
That's it. That's all it wants. And then just a few more. Like, it's almost like you're singing it a lullaby of rest. Rest. I often have this image of the war is over and the king or the queen is going around the castle, which is the body. And it's finding all the guardians and the servants that don't know the war is over. I'm just giving everyone permission to rest. Does that resonate?
Very much.
Beautiful. Now it'll trust you because you're the resident sage. And sometimes it has a few doubts that you'll be safe if it's not always functioning as an alarm. And so you just in your own way, a heart-to-heart with it, just help it know that you'll be safe, that clear seeing, which is who you are, being eternal and being vaster than a galaxy, we'll keep everything safe from now on. And then once fear rests, you can ask it who it was but before it became fear, so it can know itself.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you, love, for being with that.
Thanks. Namaste.
Namaste. See, all we're doing is inner namaste with all of this. I honor the divine within you, within the fear and the rage, within fatigue or sorrow. very active mind, we say namaste. I honor the divine within you. So the mind can liberate itself as well.
Anything else, Alejandra?
Just looking at the Q&A, there's no one raising their hands on the phone. We have a question on the Q&A from Meg, who says, "Hi, Pamela. Can you speak about jealousy? For me, my own jealousy is a bitter pill, and it's hanging on fiercely. Can you help those of us who want to find this particular vibration so difficult to welcome and embrace?"
Oh, good question, Meg. So, first of all, it helps if you realize it's not personal. When it arises in the body and then is interpreted and a story is added to it, that's what makes it feel personal. But jealousy would be a Shakespearean note in humanness. Yeah? So I found that was the first step, if it was something I had a very strong aversion to, is to note that it wasn't mine. It wasn't personal. Then I could hit with generic jealousy. And I could start with saying, you know, I really don't like you. You make me incredibly uncomfortable. And then I could ask it, what would satisfy you forever? Because it's looking for some sort of satisfaction or some, it's looking for something. And I could get to the heart of the matter rather than having to wade through millions of years of stories. I would ask, jealousy, what are you seeking? Yeah? Because anything that's restless and upset is seeking something. Now, it might tell you a few things on the surface. I'm seeking whatever, I don't know. And then ask it, and what would that give you? And then, you know, it might say something and ask it, and would that satisfy you forever? Now, because some of these emotions are like all-powerful, cranky nature spirits or elementals, but not the deep elementals. They're looking for something, and they're very upset they haven't found it yet. But after a while, once we honor them enough, they can notice they'll never find it through that role of jealousy. Or, you know, talking big picture through the role of vengeance or the role of, you know, injustice. It won't ever find what it's looking when it wears that role or costume or form or function. So all we're really ever doing is helping something see its true nature. Because that's the ultimate sat, is faction. Big clue in the word satisfaction, sat, truth. And then that crystallization of consciousness that was very agitated and just bothering you day and night will come to rest. That's what it wants. Who am I, it's saying? But some misunderstanding, the longing arises from deep within, touches the heart, rises up to the head, and the head is like a diamond. As soon as it takes form, the mind, it's a diamond with facets that refract the truth. So the truth is everything wants to come home, wants peace, constancy of love, the constancy, felt sense of constancy. So that should do the trick. But write me if it doesn't.
And we have another hand raised in San Francisco, California. Your microphone is unmuted.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you. I have a question. Could you assist me with, you know, my heart and my mind just have unbelievable pressure, and when I think I do what you've been talking about, which is, you know, allowing them and acknowledging them, and then they subside a bit, both my heart and my mind, and then they come back, and sometimes they come back even stronger, and it's unbearable. I mean, physically it's unbearable, and I try to do everything I can, you know, physically and mentally, you know, exercises and resting and this and that, and they come back. And
The pressure is actually, even though it's incredibly uncomfortable, it just means vastness wants to liberate itself in the head and the heart. So which one do you want to help liberate first, the heart or the head?
The heart.
Okay. So now bow to your heart. It is the one heart of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And ask it if it would like to spread its wings.
Yes.
Yeah. And just bowing. Yes, yes, yes. It's just like a lovely stretch. That radiance, out of love, it contains itself, and then out of love, it's kept contained to protect it. But this world needs the medicine that's in that unique heart of yours. So just letting it spread its wings. And does it feel safe when it spreads its wings?
I think so. It definitely
good.
Yeah, I think it feels, I don't know if it's safe, but I think it felt happier.
Yes, lovely. Yeah, because that's its nature, is vastness. Yeah, and, you know, we've just kept the vastness. We didn't do it, but all the other apps kept it contained just to keep it safe. So can we honor the mind now?
In what way, for example?
Well, just bow to it, just in case it's divine. Can you notice the mind is sparkling intelligence?
Yes, but it has a hardness a bit.
Yes, but it's like a golden eagle. If we have it in too small a space, it'll start to peck you, the heart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So ask it if it would like to soar.
To soar, okay.
Yeah.
It's very stubborn.
Yeah, now bow to that. Because consciousness is stubborn. It's a beautiful divine quality. And maybe if it resonates a few times, please forgive any mutual disrespect. And ask it, how vast are you? Let me see your majesty and your dignity, or your sky mind.
It's allowing a bit of space, definitely.
It's giving it more space, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now ask it if it notices when it stretches out into infinity that it doesn't lose any intelligence.
Uh-huh.
That, at least here, was the fear here in the head. That if it didn't, you know, like a dragon curling around its jeweled intelligence, if it went off flying, somebody would steal all its intelligence. That's a silly thought, but...
Yeah, no, I can't completely understand that.
Yeah. So ask it to just soar, spread its wings. The intellect is like a mystical eagle. But it's only satisfied when it knows itself as sky mind, as Buddha mind, as pure intelligence, uncontained. Ask it, does it like that?
Yeah, but I think it does, but I don't know what it is. It's still pushing with pressure.
The pressure, yeah, but thank the pressure, bow to the pressure. It was just trying to help uncontain. So pressure, it's like a pressure in the containment and pressure to liberate made everything stuck. Does that resonate?
Yes, for sure, yeah.
Yeah. Now bow to pressure, because pressure was just trying to get it right, but was blocking itself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now notice that pressure itself, once again, is omnipotent. The great sutra about who we are is that we're omniscient, that's sky mind. Omnipotent, here's our friends, resistance, pressure, containment, all those. Here's our omnipotence. Now bow to it as omnipotence and not as a problem. Sorry about that. Sorry for not knowing who you were. Does it like that?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Because this is the mischief in the divine and elemental realms, is they like pretending to be what they are not. So they make themselves into all these sort of gnarly deities rather than just mountain strength, omnipotence. Your omnipresence is the awakened heart, isn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And here's omniscience, the soaring mind. And then, isn't it curious that pressure came to the satsang with you? It went, hey, what about me?
I know, yeah.
So bow to it again as omnipotence, as the strength of formlessness.
Yeah, it released. Amazing.
Yeah. See, this is the play. When you honor it as divine, namaste, I honor the divine within you, pressure. It spontaneously self-liberates, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Isn't that cool?
It's really cool, but it seems that it's a matter of knowing which concept is the one that you need to allow.
Well, more it's living as devotion. See, you as clear seeing, you now know that nothing is what it appears to be. So if something comes, and if it's also something you don't like, you know there's treasure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right, but it's a matter of within that knowing which part is the one that needs attention.
Which part? I missed the last part of your sentence.
Which part is the one that needs attention? Or which is the concept that needs to be bowed to or allowed to?
Oh, that's okay. It'll be very organized from now on. When you go sit with a saint in India, there's often a darshan line.
Yes.
Darshan is where people, all the devotees, line up.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so that's how it is inside. There's going to be a little darshan line. Because now that you're functioning as kindness and clarity, there'll be a little line of forms going, I don't really like my form anymore. I don't like my function. I'm tired of pretending.
No, that's very clear. That's great.
Good, good.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank
so
you,
much.
Dear. Much love.
Yeah, and thank you, Alejandra. I think those questions really gave, I hope they gave everyone an opportunity. If they don't know you, Pamela, they can see your technique and the way you approach this beautiful approach with curiosity and wonder. So, well, it's been a remarkable hour and a half. Do you want to tell people what your website is if they want to learn more?
Sure.
Or to retreat?
It's www, of course, Pamela Satsang, SATSANG.com. And I love this. You might know my passion is undimmed. I love this. I can't imagine what could be more fun than unveiling life and all of its forms and functions.
And what do you have coming up? Any retreats, or can people do private sessions if they want?
Oh yeah, it's all on the website, and also, whatever, if somebody has an impulse, just get in contact with me. And yeah, and I want to thank you, Lucia, and Alejandra, and also Victoria. I mean, I just love the work you all do. Each one of us is so unique that we feed each other and this group unveiling.
Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure, and I hope that we can coerce you into doing one of your telesatsangs for the Awaken Academy at some point.
Oh, I would love that.
Oh, good. Then we'll get it scheduled.
Yeah, I think I have a telesatsang next Sunday on Easter Sunday if anybody wants to join. And then I would love to do one through you all.
All right. Well, with that, we will bid you adieu. Thank you so much for your attendance today. And Pamela, thank you for your unbounded wisdom, as always.
My pleasure, Lucia.
All right. Namaste.
Namaste to everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Pamela.
Bye, Alejandra.
Goodbye.
Bye. Okay.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference.